We'll be talking about head development. And this is a spectacularly interesting topic because the head is so different from the rest of the development of the embryo. So when I talk about somites, when I talk about rostrochordal, when I talk about all the organogenesis that occurs within the body, when you go and talk about head development, it's a completely different story. And just to see how unique head development is, you've only got to look at your neighbour sitting beside you, and each and every one of you has quite a unique facial appearance. You may all have exactly the same in terms of anatomy, stomach, pancreas, and all of the rest of the structures of your body, but in terms of facial features, they're unique to each individual, and furthermore, there is a link directly to inheritance in terms of the morphology relating to your parents. You wouldn't be the first one to say that that baby looks like its father or mother or so on. So there's obviously a genetic component related to facial appearance. There's a lot to do with recognition of individuals to do with their facial development, even though we've all got the same basic structural components of the face associated with it. So I'm going to introduce head and face development. It is quite a complex structure with many components to it, so we're not going to go through each and every component in the head region today. We'll come back and revisit some of it when we talk about endocrine development and when we talk about sensory development. I'll introduce when those components begin to form, but we'll cover them in detail when we do the lectures on those. So by the end of the lecture, you should understand the main structures derived from the pharyngeal arches. So I'm going to focus a lot on pharyngeal arch development and its contribution to the head and face. All of the components that make up the arches, and in many cases in the textbooks, you'll see them laid out as a table. It's quite useful to recognise what each arch contributes in terms of its components. Understand a little bit about the stages of development of the face and the structures as they form. And I'm going to also cover in this particular lecture, because I can't find anywhere else in the current course to put it, development of the palate and tongue. So obviously these are oral cavity structures, not related to the external face, but really important because clefting of the palate is one of the, lip, some of the major developmental abnormalities. So the formation of the palate is one of our structural abnormalities that occur with the formation of the face. A little bit about sensory development, but as I said, we'll have a separate lecture on that. And then we'll finish up by talking about the abnormalities associated with the face and neck. And there are hundreds of them. So I'm just going to cherry pick the interesting ones which are most relevant rather than the weird and wonderful abnormalities. So let's start back here in stage 14 embryo, 32 days. So we're looking into the early fifth week in development. And this is a ventrolateral view of the embryo. Now, some of these components we've already talked about in detail, the formation of the heart in this region here, forming a large bulge in the body region. Underneath it, by this stage, there's a large liver bulge directly underneath it. And then above it, we see the frontonasal prominence, which at this point in development is basically the neural tube, which has been closed, so there's no opening near a pore anymore, and a thin epithelial cover over the brain. So at this stage, this is the neural tube naked except for an epithelial coating over its surface. So here is the neural tube curved over here. Here's the heart lying underneath. And of course, lying between the prominence of the heart and the frontonasal prominence, we see the indentation on the ventral surface, which is the stomedium. The stomedium, remember, is an indentation between the brain and the heart, and the indentation on its floor is where the buccopharyngeal membrane lies. So that's the beginning of the gastrointestinal tract. Notice that everything into the stomedium from this region and from this region here is ectoderm. So there's going to be an ectodermal contribution to the oral cavity, and where the buccopharyngeal membrane lies, everything behind that will be endoderm. So we've got an ectodermal, endodermal, junctional region which will lie within the oral cavity when it forms. So in the fifth week of development, we've basically got a naked brain up here, and we need to wrap the head and face around the brain. And the way in which this occurs is by these structures here, which lie beneath the stomedium, the pharyngeal arches. So here's the first pharyngeal arch, the second, the third, the fourth, and the fourth and the sixth will fuse together to form just a visible fourth prominence on the surface. So you can only ever see four of them. These are arches because they curve around the anterior surface of the head, forming an arch in this direction here. Now, the other feature about this labelled image is you'll notice that the first arch has two components to it, a smaller maxillary component and a larger mandibular component, which spans the anterior surface directly underneath the stomedium. Don't make the mistake of numbering them 1, 2, 3, 4 and 5. This is a classic mistake. The first pharyngeal arch has two components to it and may easily be misidentified when you're looking at the structures that are formed. Sorry, words with friends. So if we look at one of these arch structures and cut a section through it, so I'm going to cut down this way here and look inside the pharyngeal arch and see what I can see. And I've shown it in this cartoon representation here. This is the red here is the surface ectoderm. So here's the surface ectoderm on the outside of the arch. The inside we can't see because it lies inside behind the buccopharyngeal membrane, and the inside will be lined with endoderm. So this will be the pharynx. And I'll show you another way of looking at this a little bit later in today's lecture. So we've got the pharynx on the inside, buccopharyngeal membrane somewhere here, and the ectoderm on the outside. Each one of these arch structures themselves consists of a core of mesenchyme. So this core of mesenchyme is a connective tissue, and this connective tissue has both mesoderm and neural crest components to it. So here's the first major difference between the rest of the body and the head region, in that the mesenchyme within the pharyngeal arch is a mixture of both mesoderm and neural crest. In the head region, neural crest makes connective tissues as well as other structures. So it's what we call ectomesenchyme. That means it's derived from ectoderm, but it forms mesodermal structures. So each one of the arch has a core of mesenchyme made up of those two major components. So in this overall view of each arch, we see it's got an ectoderm on the surface, an endoderm on the inside, and a core made up of mesoderm and ectoderm. Each one of the arches also will have the same internal components that begin to differentiate within the mesenchyme. And that is, each arch will contain an arch artery, there'll be a band of cartilage which forms within the mesenchyme, and there'll be a nerve associated with each arch. So what you get from this cartoon is that all three layers of the embryo, scroll down here, all three layers of the embryo contribute to each one of the arches. Ectoderm, mesoderm, and endoderm. And, as I said, neural crest will also contribute to the core of mesenchyme that we see here. These arches, when you read them in the textbooks, will also be described as branchial arches, or you'll see BA often in animal development. Branchia comes from the term to mean gill because it was located in the head region in fishes. But really, the structures that form the gills and the structures that form the face are quite different from each other. So pharyngeal arch is probably a better description when you're describing them rather than branchial arches. But they mean the same thing. So I mentioned to you the three-layer contribution to it. I've mentioned the core components that form within each of the arches. And now all we need to do is some of the nomenclature specifically associated with the arch itself. So on the external surface, the infold that we see on the surface, where it folds in here, this is described as the pharyngeal cleft. And once again, in some textbooks, you'll see it described as a pharyngeal groove. So groove and cleft mean the same thing. Inside the head region, where the endoderm is lining it, remember this is the foregut, a similar indentation occurs on the inside from the endoderm. And the endoderm, as it pockets out in this region, is described as a pharyngeal pouch. So a pharyngeal pouch lies between each of the arches and is made or consists of an endodermal epithelium. So we've got a pouch and a cleft, and the two of them are aligned with each other between each one of the arches. So the pouch and the cleft come into close apposition with each other between each one of the arches, and in this region here, where the pouch and the cleft come together, this region, which is both endoderm and ectoderm, we describe as a pharyngeal membrane. So if this was the first pharyngeal arch and the second and the third pharyngeal arch, then this would be the first arch cleft and the first arch pouch that would lie beneath it. And this would be the first arch membrane. This is the second arch cleft, this is the second arch pouch, and this is the second arch membrane. So that's the terminology that's used, and it lies inferior to the actual arch itself. Remember that our first arch is a little bit different in that it's bifurcated into two components, and I'll come back when I talk about development of the mandible and maxillary components. So we've got the arch, the pouch, the groove or cleft, and the membrane. And each one of these structures will form different components. So initially, each arch has the same basic components, constituents that make them up, so they're like copies of each other. But each one of the arches will form substantially different structures in the head and neck. The first and the second arch are the major face structures. The third and the fourth contribute to the neck. Third, fourth and sixth. So let's have a look at another way of looking at this. Here's our neural tube curved over like this. And the neural tube ends at the cranial neuropore, which would close, and anatomically that region is described as the lamina terminalis. So when you do neuroanatomy, that's the anatomical position of where the neuropore was. Lying directly underneath it is our pharynx, curved in the same manner directly underneath the neural tube, ending at the buccopharyngeal membrane here. So this is our endoderm, this is ectoderm. Now, when the neural tube closed, on the dorsal side of the neural tube was all of the neural crest cells. Our pharyngeal arches are wrapped around underneath the pharynx. This is not an accurate diagram because, of course, the pharynx comes out within the first arch, but the first, the second, the third, and the fourth. Each one of these arches forms in sequence, in a rostrochordal sequence. So just like the somites form rostrochordally, the first arch is the first one to appear, then the second, then the third, then the fourth, then the sixth. Each one of the arches is also different in size. So the first arch is the largest. So when we look up here in the first arch, it's huge compared to the second. Third is smaller and the fourth is smaller again. These first and second arches overpower the inferior arches, that is, they grow over the top of them, and in fact the second arch grows down over the top of the third and the fourth. So later in development we can only see the first and the second arch externally. We can't see the other ones, they're internalised in the neck region, and so will contribute to neck components. This forms a region which you'll see in the lab this week, known as the cervical sinus, when the second arch grows over the top of the other ones. Okay. So here are our arches, mesoderm within them, and during the early stages in development, week 3, 4 and 5, we see a migration of neural crest from the hindbrain regions into each of the pharyngeal arches. And each segment in this hindbrain region migrates into different arches. So there is a rostrocaudal sequence of migration as well, contributing neural crests to each one of the arches. So it's within now the core we have a mixture of mesoderm and neural crest as these migrate in. And in the second lecture this week, we'll have some fun observing the actual migration of neural crest into the pharyngeal arches. Fun for me anyway. So if we take this and we cut through the embryo, this is basically what we're looking at in the end of the fourth week of development. Here is our first pharyngeal arch. Here is the second pharyngeal arch, the third, the fourth, and down the sixth would be fused in with it just here. So this is the external surface of the embryo, and the same on the other side, the first arch, the second, third, and fourth. Slightly different because it's not a true cross-section. This region here is where the buccopharyngeal membrane was, and as we curve over the arches, we go down towards the stomach here. So this is the curvature of the pharynx in the midline. Now, this region here is going to be where the mouth will form, the oral cavity, and this component of the first arch is going to form the mandible, my lower jaw, and the upper component, the maxillary component, is going to form the upper jaw, this region here. So the first arch is going to form these structures here. So this is the first arch, it's wrapped around the oral cavity. Maxillary component at the top, mandibular component at the bottom, mandible, maxilla. So in this region here, we're going to form the lower jaw. The second arch is going to contribute to a lot of the face. So the second arch actually expands and contributes to facial structure as well. And so we end up with something that looks like this. The mandible here, the maxilla on top, the pharynx curved over, a lot of the lining of the oral cavity, ectodermal in origin, and a junctional region occurring within the oral cavity between ectoderm and endoderm, where the foregut begins. Okay. In this image as well, what I want you to point out to you is that all of this is endoderm around the foregut, and that this is connected to this region out here, which is the pouch. So this is the endodermal pouch going out, and you can actually see a pharyngeal membrane on this side. And similarly, this would be connected up to this cavity here, and this would be the pharyngeal membrane here. So this would be the third pharyngeal membrane, and this is the fourth on this side. Because it's not a cross-section. Third one there. And you can see the second pharyngeal membrane and the first one. Okay. So let's now go through, component by component, what each one of the structures within the arches contribute. And I'll do it pretty quickly because it's one of those easy-to-rote-learn type things. It's not something that I want to spend a lot of time on. So with the arch arteries, if you remember when we did early cardiac development, the flow of blood within the embryo goes placental vein to the liver to then the heart. The outflow tract is a muscular structure called the truncus arteriosus, and that goes into a thin-walled sac in the neck region called the aortic sac, and then out into the pharyngeal arches. So each arch has its own artery coming off the aortic sac. These pharyngeal arch arteries then empty backwards or dorsally to the paired dorsal aortas, which then run down the length of the embryo and out into the placental arteries. So then, during development of the pharyngeal arches, each one of those arch arteries changes in terms of what it will contribute to the adult anatomy. Most of the first arch artery regresses and remains only as a minor remnant forming the maxillary artery. Similarly, the second arch artery also regresses and it contributes the stapedial artery, the small arteries that run out into the middle ear. The lower arches are the ones which have a major contribution to the cardiovascular system in the adult. The third arch will contribute the common carotid arteries and the internal carotid arteries. So a lot of the carotid arteries coming up through the neck region are derived from the third pharyngeal arch artery. The fourth arch artery will form part of the aortic arch, the outflow tract of the heart, and the right part will contribute the right subclavian artery. So it's got a different structure that forms from the right and left pharyngeal arch artery. And the sixth arch will form, the left one forms the left pulmonary artery and the right one forms the right pulmonary artery, so it contributes to lung development. So the inferior arches have a major vascular contribution. The superior ones have a minor vascular contribution. Let's now look at the band of cartilage which differentiates within the arch itself. And each one of these cartilages that form forms as a band within the arch initially. So the first arch cartilage in the textbooks you'll see described as Meckel's cartilage. It lies within the mandible region and forms a horseshoe and an anteriorly like this, a cartilage, and it forms a template for where the mandible will form. The mandible forms by intramembranous ossification adjacent to that cartilage. This is an important concept. It's not endochondral ossification. The cartilage of Meckel's cartilage regresses and is lost, and the ossification occurs by intramembranous ossification adjacent to the cartilage. So in essence, the Meckel's cartilage is a primordia or a template for where the maxilla will eventually form. Sorry? Mandible. Did I say maxilla? I'm sorry. Mandible is what I meant. So it's horseshoe shaped. It's this structure that we see here within the cross section. In this cross section here, we can see at a later stage in development the tongue, the lower jaw, the palate, nasal cavity, and wherever's blue is where there's cartilage. So this is the floor of the brain, the chondrocranium. And this structure that form that is lying here is Meckel's cartilage. And what I want to point out to you is that it lying beside the cartilage, this blue structure forming here, is bone. So the bone is forming adjacent to Meckel's cartilage, not replacing it. To replace the cartilage would be endochondral ossification. To ossify from the membrane adjacent to it is intramembranous ossification.
Does that mean that it doesn't take the place, like it doesn't fill the area where the cartilage originally was?
It does.
So
Meckel's cartilage regresses. You don't have Meckel's cartilage in your face anymore. It's lost. So it's a transient structure in early embryonic development that establishes the structure of where the mandible will form later.
And then it actually moves into that space.
Yeah. The mandible will grow over the top of it. And in fact, I've included some images where you can see later in early fetal development where the bone is ossifying around the surface of the Meckel's cartilage, and it'll be lost later on. So this whole feature here will be lost. So that's Meckel's cartilage. And it's quite an important contribution because not only does it make the mandible, but if you consider it a horseshoe like this, it extends up dorsally in this direction, and the ends of this horseshoe, the very ends on either side of Meckel's cartilage, contribute two of the inner ear ossicles. The malleus and incus are formed from the very ends of Meckel's cartilage up here. So this second image here of the each one of the pharyngeal arch cartilages. The first arch cartilage, which lies here, Meckel's cartilage, it regresses in the region where the mandible forms. Got it right that time, mandible. And the ends of the horseshoe up here, which extend up to where the ears lie, will contribute the malleus and incus of the middle ear. And this is Meckel's cartilage. While we've got this image up here, the second pharyngeal arch has a band of cartilage through it, and it's called Reichart's cartilage is the traditional name. It forms a horseshoe around the neck region, and the very ends of Meckel's cartilage contribute the third inner ear ossicle, or middle ear ossicle, the stapes. So the three middle ear bones have different embryonic origins from the first and second pharyngeal arches. Thank you. You'll see that the second arch will contribute anteriorly, the ventral region, to the superior part of the hyoid bone, and the vast majority of the hyoid bone, the inferior part of it, comes from the third arch cartilage. So first arch shown in red, second arch cartilage shown in blue, and the third arch cartilage is shown in green in terms of their contribution to the skeletal elements of the head and neck. So we see from the second arch the stapes and also contribution to the styloid process of the temporal bone. And we see the ventral part forming the hyoid bone, the lesser cornu and superior body for those anatomy students amongst us, anatomy. The third arch forms also part of the hyoid, the greater cornu and the inferior part. And the fourth and the sixth arch cartilages contribute laryngeal cartilages, the bands of cartilage around my neck, in this area here, the laryngeal cartilages around here. So they'll form all except for the epiglottis, which has a different embryonic origin. So they're the cartilage components in each one of the arches. This brings us now to the muscle that forms within each arch. And in the first arch, the muscles that differentiate within that arch form the muscles of mastication. Nice, I got that right that time. It's mastication. And it's the muscles to do with chewing. So anything to do with chewing comes from the first arch. And that is the myohyoid, the tensor tympanic, the anterior digastric, tensor tympanic, of course, not to do with chewing, to do with middle ear, but we'll come back and do that when we do sensory development. The second arch contributes all of the muscles of facial expression. So while the first arch makes all of these muscles, all of the facial expression muscles come from the second arch. The third and fourth and sixth contribute the muscles that we see in the neck region. Now, an easy way to remember what the contributions then are for the arches is that the first arch has everything to do with this chewing, the mandible maxilla and the chewing muscles and the nerves associated with it as well. Whereas the second arch has to do with the facial development, the facial expression and the nerves that control facial expression. They're all linked together. So when we look at the nerve contributing to it from each of the arches, cranial nerve 5, the trigeminal, the largest of the cranial ganglia, will innervate the maxillary and mandibular, and the cranial will form part of the sensory region. The second arch, cranial nerve 7, the facial nerve, to do with facial expression. And then arch 3, 4 and 6, a cranial 9 and 10, the glossopharyngeal to do obviously with neck structures, and the vagus wanders off and innervates body structures. So each one of them has a cranial nerve associated with it. Cranial nerve 5, arch 1, cranial nerve 7, facial nerve, arch 2, cranial nerve 9, the glossopharyngeal nerve, and arch 4 and 6 is the vagus and divisions of the laryngeal.